The 600. If you could just elaborate a little bit more, you mentioned an amount of 83 billion and the 693 billion. Just explain that to us again. You moved a little bit too fast. Thank you.
Billion of uncommitted capital. In other words, what we've said is if we had to look at the problem from a South African point of view as opposed to an Eskom point of view, we have to start spending money in those last 3 years to ensure security of supply beyond 2017. That's just an estimate. So I've said is that if you just looked at Eskom committing itself to Kusile and no more, you could take 93 billion out of that. It's included in this year. It's in the 3 years. You can't. I mean, obviously the detailed model has it specifically, but it's within those 3 years. And you'll see on my last slide, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Sure. And sorry, it is just an accounting formulation. But the revenue here is a positive, and the expenditure is in a negative. But within the expenditure, the outflows, although they are different, they should in theory have minuses. They don't. These, if you add up 42 billion, 35 billion, 87, and you minus these, you get to your 162 minus. The negative here is, because this is a cash flow statement, not an income statement, these are just movements in working capital where you can save cash from 1 year to another. You're just deferring it. So it's just with better cash management how you can manage. So sorry for that confusion, but these are all outflows at the top level. This is inflow, cash in, 90 billion, minus 162 billion outflow, minus cash out, minus 71, it gives you a 71 out, minus another 20 out in terms of interest. So in the first year, you minus 92 out before you look for funding to try and close it down. So minus is out. Positive is in.
So, you understand that for the you put the money in the next person. So this thing, you can actually read it across. It's for financial, for financial,
yes.
In terms of line items.
Yes.
Or you can read it downward.
Yes.
In terms of one financial year, the different line items.
Correct.
In the financial year.
Correct. Correct. And the only number that's cumulative, that keeps growing from year to year, is your net shortfall here. Because this is per year up to here, and then this is a cumulative.
Okay. You have to see
that. Sure. Now, I do understand the confusion. I apologize. I will put it simpler next time. I understand.
Okay. Thanks. Yes, ma'am?
Chair, just also just to emphasize one other area, is that the reason why, as a shareholder, we're actually quite comfortable with this model is that now we know from the network determination as to what the revenue is going to be for the next 3 years, and also making that forecast. So from that base of this particular model, we are comfortable with that. The question was asked earlier on as to the reliability of the numbers that are being presented. As a shareholder, we also, or after the NERSA determination, we actually requested ESCOM to do an independent review of this particular financial model. So there has been an independent institution that has actually looked at the financial model, and hence we are actually quite comfortable with the numbers that are being presented before the committee. I just wanted to put that point.
Any other questions?
I just want to get back to that 93 billion again. Are you saying that it's uncommitted? I just want to understand that. Mm. That is uncommitted 93 billion.
Correct.
To an SMS sitting at home, how would you explain that uncommitted 93?
To the person sitting at home, I would explain it by saying that if ESCOM had to ensure its continued going concern and its solvency with such a large shortfall, it needs to find another method by which to fund new technology. That's what I would say.
And would not have to depend on NERSA and this.
Correct.
One but short for accumulated. And what does that mean to the total revenue of a short if a short for accumulated?
The best way to look at it, and I do understand and see the confusion a little bit in your eyes, is the what needs to be focused on here and also re-emphasized is the unsecured funding as we sit today is 172 billion, okay, and year by year also results in a cumulative shortfall of 17. So the actual shortfall is 190 billion in total over 7 years. Now, What's very important to say is that...
Can I just write it?
Yes.
Unsecured 172 and 17 means the money you need that you don't have, then you must go and find elsewhere.
Yes. if we're committing to the 93.
Yes. Oh, I can't hear you. Sorry. Person with the question.
If the figures are staggering figures of the deficit, why did we ask for such little amount coming from the world? Is that a shyness that is declined?
They are
textbooks. I think the only
answer. Why are we not pushing? Well, then, why do you think we need this? But if you cannot give us all the money, the minimum amount is only that you give
it. I'd say there's a number of answers to that. The first is, this is the biggest loan ever provided by the World Bank to a single institution. That's the first thing. The biggest...
That's a
non-starter. The second is, obviously the World Bank would have had to look at from themselves where they're going to have their concentration of risk. So they may have felt that they will not put that amount of money all into ESCOM. But having said that, remember when the negotiations started with the World Bank, was more than 18 months ago, as I understand it, and the Mercer ruling wasn't even on the table at that stage, because that would have made a difference. Okay, I'll answer that one first, I think. What this shows is that at the time that we did this model, because I'm going back in time, is that once we had the Mercer hearing, we ran our model. Okay? Once we had the World Bank assured, we re-ran it. And it showed that we had this 190 billion shortfall. And that formed the basis of all the exercises that Mr. McQuarrie spoke about, of sitting with Credit Suisse, sitting with JP Morgan, of how we fund that. Now, obviously, the way that you fund long-term assets is through long-term debt. So if you can get debt over 25 to 30 years and have a continued revenue stream, then you can repay it. And that's the model that we're working towards. You can repay it. But what you can't do, what you shouldn't be doing, is committing yourself, as we've said, to the 93 billion on the basis of where you haven't project financed it up front from the beginning. I think that's the important part. So we've learned that lesson out of this. On the reconciliation, the 440 billion, if we just look at the total column, to reduce the 440, you have to take off the 87 of secured. You then have to minus the 163 of a high probability. And that leaves you with 172 plus 17, so 190 billion shortfall. So that's the reconciliation. So if you take 440 minus 87 minus 163 gives you the 190.
Okay.
Okay.
I would like to ask you about what Mercer recommended about your necessary thing in what you call manpower, which I would call the same. How do you compare to utilities like yourself, in developing countries like our own in terms of your remuneration package? Have you done that study? Because you are saying your projections were based on the fact that you wanted you know that you will need more people now going forward for the capital expenditure program. But have you checked whether you are probably not overpaying yourself in relation to the economic situation in the country and in relation to the benchmark, how we compare with other developing economies? That's my first question. My other question is your unsecured necessary funding, which amounts to 190 billion, and the World Bank scenario. Why do I get a sense that your first option of looking for funding, you look outward, you look to the external market, you do not look internally? I'm raising this issue because of the issue of interest. My interest that you will pay in the long run to borrow in external market as compared to interest that you will pay in the long run if you borrow in the in the market internally of the country. The pointed question I want to ask you is, have you ever considered that uncommitted support in your plans moving forward? Are you going to prioritize looking for money inside the country before you go abroad? And what is going to be the impact of the interest you will take in it? And primarily, have you had a negotiation, or do you anticipate to have a negotiation with people that have probability and potential to lend you money, like PIC, like government pension funds and other pension funds in the country? Is your propensity to look externally instead of firstly looking internally in the country with the issue of playing around with social interest in the long run?
Okay. On the first, on the benchmark of the HR costs, obviously, if you compare South Africa as an economy to a comparable developing, when you talk about the utility market, then India and China come to mind. And
why not India and China?
Yeah. So if you compare just from a benchmark point of view, the South African average wage is more costly than it would be in India. We've done those comparisons. It is. The issue about how do we benchmark ourselves, obviously we have a grading system, an international Patterson grading system, and we benchmark ourselves in the local market as to what we should be paying people at the various grades. We obviously also have a very high content of bargaining units in our workforce, and we negotiate the wages and the salaries with them on an annual basis. But having said that, there's no doubt that there's potential efficiencies in Eskom in terms of productivity. I wouldn't say that we are the most productive company in the world, so your savings need to come through in productivity, the control over overtime, the control over new appointments. In other words, making sure that people are actually earning their keep, and I think that's a big drive within Eskom to ensure that we become very competitive within.
How does your remuneration package compare to the economic situation in the country before you even benchmark it with developing economies?
Yeah.
And before you even look at it internally in terms of your,
yeah,
your processes of wage negotiation?
Yeah.
How do you compare to, I'm raising this because we all know that we have the highest Gini coefficient in the world. So have you bothered to compare yourself with the economic situation of government?
Yeah, we certainly do. We certainly do, you know, at all levels. I mean, we compare our managerial levels, our supervisor levels, you know, our lower levels across the economy. One of the real challenges that Eskom faces, and it's a challenge in a lot of industries, is at the supervisory level. So there's a shortage in that supervisory level, and therefore to attract that sort of skill of people is a difficult challenge. On the second question of how do we intend funding the 190 billion and do we have a propensity to look externally, if I can answer that if I can draw your attention to this local bonds over here, 163 billion. We have a very active local bond market, but we have to be careful that we as SOEs and government don't saturate the market. So we have a combined approach to the market in terms of who raises money when on the local bond market. Our biggest bondholder is PIC. But you raised an interesting point about the government pension fund, potential other institutions like IDC, potential other institutions like DBSA. These are part of the solutions we are looking at to fund that shortfall, either through an equity type instrument or through a debt type instrument. So we are looking at those options. We don't just have a propensity that we have to raise international money. Having said that, the current loan with the World Bank, if you took in today's, the interest rate we're paying times the current exchange rate is cheaper currently than you would can secure debt in the local market. So we've got a very good deal in the World Bank. But, you know, obviously if the exchange rate worsens over time, and obviously that will affect interest rates, but, you know, so it's very hard to determine where it goes. But currently it is cheaper, yes. That's true.
It will be possible that within the next 3 months you will report to the committee about your engagement with some pension funds, DBSA, the possibilities to address your engagement and yield you results, what are the successes in the network.
Sure, we will definitely, together with our stakeholder, DPE, we will definitely report back on that. And that's definitely one of our game plans.
Real concrete direction to study, this is the way I will be able to
And this is the what's going to happen. Any other problems?
Okay, if I can answer the last first. Okay, if I take the World Bank loan specifically, it's based on LIBOR, which is an international exchange rate, plus a variable. And if I take it today at the current exchange rate, it averages out at 9.6% per annum, which is cheaper than what you can get. As the second issue on the rigorousness of our financial model, I need to point out quite strongly on that, my disagreement with that observation. What we're trying to point out here is the problem that we face. If I, as a director of Eskom, had to say to myself that Eskom, the company, comes before the security of supply of South Africa, which is my fiduciary duty, then I would immediately exclude the 93 billion. Because I don't have a funding plan for it, but I'm trying to highlight the issue, my funding gap would come down, and we have a very concrete plan in place to go and bridge that gap. Because all we're talking about here is the gap, not the solutions, because that's the second part of this presentation. So we have a very firm, we know exactly how much bonds are in the market, we know exactly our maturities, we've got a 20-year model, we know exactly how much export credits we can get for each of our commitments on our contracts, and we know exactly where in the world we could find some of the gaps that we need. So we have spent a lot of time and effort in actually closing that down. And all we're talking about here is the funding gap, because it's very important for this committee to realize the extent of the problem we started off with, so that we can say, let's break this down into its pieces. But as Eskom, the company, as directors with Mr. McQuarna, the thing we won't do, and we will never do, is run this company into insolvency. We will make sure that we live within our means. That's an absolute fact. Otherwise, we must be fired as directors. That's our fiduciary duty. On the first issue of the Eskom estimation of Kusile, the close down of the 80 billion versus 142 billion, yes, I agree and I concur with those figures. A couple of reasons, not all that you'll be happy with. The one is cost of delay. We did delay Kusile for a year.
You know what? You have to later down there what city is it?
Not specifically, no.
Oh. Well, I thought later. I thought we were going to make a
slide.
I think you're comfortable with
yes.
Now, in this case, because I thought we could wait for the time.
No, I'm comfortable, Chairperson. There's a cost of delay. So when you delay a contract, you will pay extensions of time, etc., to the contracts that you've placed. And you would have also, because you've had a cost of delay, about 50% of the content is foreign, we would have suffered on the exchange rate at the time, so that's part of the cost of delay. The other important issue is that all our contracts we've entered into are in terms of FIDIC, which is, and sorry, I don't have the exact definition for the acronym because it's French, but it's a standard worldwide construction contract. It has CPA adjustments, which is cost price adjustments, so on salaries, on materials, as they're linked to indices, and those indices have been increasing, so your original 80 billion will increase by the indices. That's the other part of the adjustment, and then the big portion of the difference is in terms of accounting. And sorry to confuse the audience with accounting. In terms of accounting, you need to capitalize into the cost of your asset any interest you incur while building the asset from an accounting perspective. It doesn't affect the cash flow, but from the accounting perspective. So when you're looking at an 80 billion versus 142 billion and you've delayed it, there's more interest that you have to capitalize when estimating that final cost. And those would be the explanations.
Thank you.
There's an abstract cost. It's a virtual cost. It's not
real. Correct. But that's the accounting, unfortunately. Chairperson, I have no evidence of that.
You know what, if you want to discuss the thing, I want us to stop the procedure and put it aside and interrogate it. If you want to do that. I think that would be a decent discussion. It would be better for
procedure.
So I'm not discussing you, but we must agree that we need a discussion of the
No, the 9% that I'm quoting you is in the rand amounts. If I had to convert in rand amounts, yes.
Okay.
It's much, much lower in
and
dollar
amounts. And then dollar amount, what percentage?
Well, it's LIBOR, and I think LIBOR is at 0. Put, about 8%, yeah.
You see, you lend that money in dollar terms.
Yes.
Now, in dollar terms, what interest are you paying in terms of percentage?
It's LIBOR, and I'm not sure what the exact LIBOR rate is today. That's the London index. Borrowing rate plus 0.5%. So I think
we'll have to have a figure.
Sorry?
We want
I will get that for you, Chairperson.
It's not today. In fact, you should be having it in your figure.
We've got, no, because LIBOR changes on a regular basis,
but
Chairperson.
On the day when you find where did you say?
Yeah, LIBOR, as I said, plus 0.5% plus a variable spread of 0.24%. So LIBOR today, as I understand, is sitting at about 0.5%. So if I added that, it's probably around the one, just over 1.2% in dollar terms today.
There's a grace period of about 7 years to repay the loan. So you have to look at it holistically in terms of the magnitude and the size of the loan, which is 20 billion, and the period over which the loan has to be repaid, and also being given a 7-year grace period. So looking from that perspective, and when you compare to what you can secure in the local environment, therefore it's very attractive. Because also, you have to take into account as to what has been happening in the global financial environment, whereby can you really raise that amount of money at those rates, at that quantum? So, and given also the limited space of time that we actually need to secure the funding for it. Hence, the World Bank loan was so critical that it had to be secured given the magnitude of the funding that we're actually facing currently, and also in the African Development Bank. So it's within that context that we are saying when you compare, it is actually quite attractive.
I don't want to delay this meeting. I personally take your argument as a pinch of salt, but that's not the argument here today. I think there is still much more value in terms of lending in local markets than the World Bank. In fact, I thought that the World Bank was the last resort. The reason why we never go to the World Bank before, and I don't want to begin this argument, I think it's the right argument. But we would imprint upon you that it is crucial to lend in local markets because then money will remain in the country. If the percentage of interest is the only thing that you go by, you think they are losing. But maybe this debate we should continue elsewhere.
Yeah, I think so, Chairperson, because there's a perspective to be kept as well. One must take into account that we did talk to local financiers as well. The facility we got of more than 20 billion is actually very big to handle.
for you have to syndicate it among more than one financial institution. And in any event, the financial institutions then would go offshore and end up being an intermediary between the borrower and the lender, and still charge you a commission on top of that. So what we've actually done is we've cut out that intermediation process and actually created a benefit for the country. So that is the other perspective that must be kept in mind. No single bank today in South Africa can afford to lend anybody more than 20 billion rand. That's a fact.
Okay. But having said that, you still in 3 months time reporting to us about your engagement with your principal.
Chairperson, we confirm that it may have to be earlier because you know we intend having solutions on the table at the end of this month and proceeding thereafter. So
okay.
3 months is fine. Thanks.
We have one more question. Two.
South Africa was having a global village. 15 years actually very short. I would like to have an idea of how it compares with other exports of other world of the whole world. When you are speaking, I think the truth is that you can have a forum where you sit and other facing as the other countries that we can say are facing similar challenges that we have to find in the world. Let's say that in Brazil. It sounds like an extreme or something like that. But I think let's listen to this. I think we have to understand a sense of how we compare with other countries. How are we an aberration?
Let's think of the country.
First of all, is there the possibility of a second World Bank loan that was reported over and above the 28 million that was in the record? Is there a possibility of a second one? And as you mentioned, the government is a shareholder. Of course, a public concern because it operates with public money.
Mm-hmm.
Is Eskom willing to expose your information on your own website, or at least the parliament or this committee, or will it be taken in secret so that we have to back out some information from you?
You mean the information about the part of the second world
and the contract agreement? You know, because it's a public concern. Public enterprise, and in some way, the consumer, the taxpayer, can ask questions to us. We need to answer. And connected to this chairperson, contracts are so entangled with each other. If you get 5 grand here and 10 grand from that institution and 50 grand from that institution, now the World Bank says the money will not go for the toilet for each other. But how are you going to separate that money? Because of this debate between Hitachi and Transnet, how are you going to make sure that the World Bank loan will not be allocated to Hitachi? Because contracts, you know, you've got them on your asset liability. You've got income here, and the capital that's flowing out that line. We need clarity for people who are concerned.
I think one more question. Sorry, I've noted two names.
Thank you very much. There was a question actually, I think it was a week ago, where they asked me why we have to borrow money overseas instead of using institutions such as IDC. Because after all, IDC is a company that is funded by the state. It is not a state-owned. So they said, after all, it's a state-owned company, it's money from the same government, why are we going outside for money instead of using the very same IDT, which is state-owned? Which is
Chairperson, as we speak today, Transnet is on roadshow internationally raising
money. No, in fact, I wanted to say to Mr. Mapana, were you in the same place with Mr. Zwei?
We crossed over each other.
I know you met. So, you know, you must know that I have a case in the ground. That's another question, which I gave question.
Thank you, Chair. Since the war time is known, there was about $260 million funding for renewable energy and solar effectively. What is our actual agenda or program, has your program been regarding renewable funds? And I'd like to get more information about it. Are we going to take it up? What are our plans? Is that money sufficient, and at what point are we going to actually start the program if we are going to?
Okay, I will hand over to Mr. McConnell to answer some of them, but perhaps I can start with the World Bank loan, and it's actually $750 million that's been assigned for renewables, and it consists of three portions. One is towards a 110 megawatt, and remember we're a 41,000 megawatt producer, so it's towards a 110 megawatt wind farm in Syria, wind farm. There's also money set aside to invest in concentrated solar power technology to potentially produce 110 megawatts of solar power. And the rest is our road-to-rail project to stop using trucks and oil, et cetera, and rather do it through rail. So that comes to the $750 million. And the numbers I'm quoting you in megawatts are very important because they're very, very small in terms of our renewables. And again, without abdicating our responsibilities as the sole utility in South Africa, the whole renewable debate and the technology mix and where it all fits in is part of what we are awaiting from the RP2. That has to come through in those decisions from a South African perspective. So yes, we continue as Eskom to look at all the research and the development and build these trial plants, but those bigger technology issues and how you fund them, because currently they're quite expensive. That may not be the case in the long term. How you fund them, that's a separate issue and debate that we have to undertake. You're 100% right. We are not taking much of that into account in our funding model. And again, that whole technology drive, you know, in terms of South Africa's commitments to cut carbon or to reduce carbon emissions in relative terms by 2025 and then in absolute terms thereafter, has to be part of the solution in terms of the RP. Where Eskom fits in or doesn't fit in, those are the debates that still have to take place. But right now in here,
there's very little money into renewables other than what we've stated, which just kicks on to one of the World Bank questions.
No.
We're going to come back to it, just trying to thread it. Of course. If I can just pick up two of the World Bank questions and then I will hand over to Ms. McQuana. The is there more money available from the World Bank? Definitely. There's what the World Bank calls a clean technology fund, and they've spoken of an amount around the 250 million. Yes, there was question asked is, are we going to go to the World Bank to get more money? My answer to that is that the World Bank have indicated to us that there is a what they call a clean technology fund, where if we have a renewable project, we can approach them to obtain funding. So that is potentially one of the areas we may look at. We haven't got any plans to currently look at that itself. So there is an area where we can look at money on the clean technology. The chances of them funding coal, I would suggest, are zero. Before I hand over to Mr. McQuana, the issue of how do we control the money that comes from the World Bank to make sure it gets paid for the specific contract. In terms of the World Bank loan, as you pointed out, they have funded 16 of our contract packages, and we've got total contract packages of 33, so they've funded 16 of them. What you have to do to draw down on that money is, as you incur the costs and you get the invoices, you submit those to the World Bank, the World Bank pays you the money and you pay the supplier. So there's a full thread of flow through of funds of how it actually works. I'll hand over to Ms. McQuarrie.
Thank you. Chairperson, let's perhaps just start first with the RP2 matter. I indicated at the beginning that we've got 27 power stations. 85% are coal. In line with the IRP, Eskom envisages that in time we will scale down from 85% to about 70% coal, and the gap will then be taken up by other energy mixtures. We, sitting where we sit, we don't have authority mandate to speak on what is inside the IRP. The Ministry of Energy would have to come and share with this committee what is the content of the IRP. Our understanding, though, is that it envisages an integrated energy mix. So, second point, really, that I would wish the committee to always remember is that Eskom is a regulated business. The nuclear regulator tells us what to do with nuclear. NERSA tells us what to do overall with tariffs around electricity. So, we can only recommend, but we must also comply with what we are now told through the various regulatory bodies. Because once IRP2 gets gazetted, then it becomes something we have to comply with once we know what we are responsible for and who else is responsible for what. So let's keep that perspective in mind, because then you'll appreciate where we're coming from in terms of how we deal with some of these questions. Are we an aberration? Certainly not. We are the 10th largest utility in the world. The 9 utilities ahead of us come from first world countries or developed countries. They come from Italy, they come from France. Then, of course, yes, there's a Korean utility in terms of nuclear. There's a Japanese utility among the top 9, and then ourselves. So when we compare Eskom, we must appreciate also that you're comparing a utility that comes from the African continent, the developing African continent, but that plays among the best in the world. However, in terms of the challenges we have faced, that we continue to face, of an imbalance between supply and demand of electricity, a few countries have gone through this. Chile has gone through exactly where we are 4 or 5 years ago, exactly where we are, under different circumstances. But if you ask me as a legislator, where would you go to look in the sort of emerging world, I would say Chile is a good place to go. If you want to see where, which country has rolled out solar at scale, at large scale, and scale being about 1,900 megawatts in this instance, Japan is the way, is the place to go. Spain is the second place to go in terms of solar scale at 2,200 megawatts. But Spain, among others today, is taking along Greece with economic challenges, among others around this economic situation of solar. Doing solar at scale is very, very costly. And just for 2,000 megawatts, when we're doing 40,000 plus megawatts. The data that Mr. Oflati showed at the beginning of his presentation with various numbers of megawatts show that we're doing 44,200 megawatts today. By 2028, this country would have added 50,000 megawatts more. So coal is our reality. Our job as Eskom, as we see it, is to find cleaner ways of doing coal. Secondly, I would welcome an opportunity, Madam Chairperson, for us to come and talk just about coal, not coal primary energy cost, the science of South African coal. Because the science of South African coal. Because the coal from the south versus the coal from the north has got less sulfur, which makes it less poisonous to the atmosphere. It's just a pity those colleagues who were protesting earlier are not here anymore. Mm-hmm. We've got cleaner coal in the southern hemisphere than the northern hemisphere.
And we export the rest of our coal.
Well, that's another debate. So we're talking about the science of coal, Madam Chairperson. So in that science of coal, we have a job and an opportunity to say, in line with emerging technologies around carbon sequestration and so forth, how do we make sure we capture the little bit of carbon that still comes out of our coal before it hits the atmosphere? Secondly, we have an opportunity to develop an industry in South Africa of how to clean coal so that by the time you burn it, it's less emissive. So from that point of view, those would be a debate that excites us at Eskom, because then you can speak to the developmental reality of coal in South Africa and still speak to how to do it cleaner and still achieve the same goals you would want to achieve with mitigating against climate change, and then buying yourself time to do solar on scale, but when you can afford to do it in large quantities. So the other question was about Eskom's financial information. We are going through audited financials as we speak, and so it is our endeavor that we should soon, first week of June thereabout, be in a position to publish interim financials. And normally we publish our detailed financial information along that basis. Mr. Oflati spoke to the question of the other parts of the, in terms of the, in addition to the question you answered about contracts, if one goes to the World Bank website, you don't even have to rely on Eskom. The World Bank published in detail the decision around the Eskom decision on their website, so it's there to download for free. And it speaks to Chancellor House and Hitachi in terms of what portion is not covered and what portion. So we can refer to that website. It's not coming from Eskom, it's from the funder themselves in terms of what the conditions precedent are. I'm going to assume the other question on Transnet being rich was tongue in cheek, Madam Chair, so it doesn't need to be answered formally. In terms of the IDC, I think I should respond on the woman.
Ourselves, government, should take the responsibility to download, simplify it, distribute it, communicate it.
We do so all the time, Madam Chair, but as you also indicated earlier, our information is always looked at with a pinch of salt. So it's best also when people get it from an independent source other than ESCO. Then it corroborates what we've been saying all along.
That's what I'm saying. We too must bear the responsibility.
That's it. The IDC, Honourable Member, is that we are in conversation not only with IDC, with PIC and other local institutions. The biggest loan that the IDC can afford to give anybody right now, and I've had one-on-one discussion with them, is 2 billion rand. That's because everybody has to act within reason, within what they legitimately can and cannot do. We're talking, I don't mean to over-exaggerate things, but if you look at the numbers we're talking about, 440 billion rand looked at in context over the 7 years is this current financial year's national estimates of expenditure, 35-40% thereof. So hopefully the picture is clearer now. 40% of our government's national estimate of expenditure is what ESCOM is going to spend in 7 years. That's the kind of big numbers we're talking about. So yes, this sort of come down to the 190 that we're talking about. So that is why we've got to spread the risk. We've got to go global, we've got to do a bit of local, we've got to do as many institutions as we can so that you spread the risk for country and for company in this instance. So hopefully that gives us some perspective. I think the other questions, Chair, have been responded to. Thank you.
Yes, I have...
Ms. Jackie would like to add also from me.
Before I speak to you, I just
wanted to also to bring to attention that you can go into our DP website, the National Treasury, whereby when we work on the World Bank loan, we actually consolidated all the questions that all the embassies were asking those people who are actually sitting on the board. So it's about 25 questions that have been answered comprehensively, just to give some idea as to what the information that's actually on the PAD, because the PAD document that Mr. McCann is referring to is about a 200-page document. So the 25 questions actually answer the crux of the issues that were raised during the World Bank.
Let me continue with that video.
basic issue is that if there's enough money to build 100 megawatts on the credit card, or are we going to have to raise more money for healthcare to build it? Now, Jimmy, is there a timeline put to this? Because I know that the CSP plant, for instance, has been on this on board for about 10 years and we've never funded. Is there a timeline that the World Bank has put on when these two plants need to be built, or is it an open-ended And then thirdly, is this money coming from the Clean Technology Fund at the moment? Because my understanding is that when it comes to renewables and when it comes to World Bank loans, there should be a certain preferential loan that gets given to countries in terms of building renewables because they recognize the higher cost. And that stemming from the Copenhagen Accord, money should be going into the Clean Technology Fund to in fact make it easier and cheaper to loan that money to build renewables. So I just want some input on that.
Ma'am?
Is the money enough for the wind plant group and others? My hoping is that it would be, is, was it meant to be seen or was it meant to be included? That the other point of the person that I want to.
The money for the solar is definitely seed money, so that is for sure. The money for the wind is not all of the funding, but we do have some funding set aside in Eskom, but it is quite a bit of that funding, and the aim is to bring that online. It takes about 3 years. So it's a three-year project. Is a seed money to investigate technology? No. To investigate the potential of doing a 110 megawatt pilot plant.
And other concerns that Mr. Kinnear raised, we are concerned that we must for one to the world. And maybe because you guys are sending to a second application, you may not, maybe we need a for cleaner technology. So when you do that application, we hope that you will have a broader engagement. So that these things that we are raising affect
us into
the second
award for Chairperson, absolutely. I think from an Eskom perspective, we wait in anticipation for the RP2 so we can have these engagements as a country as to what we have to do from a technology perspective and where we're going to find the funding to do it. I mean, that's the absolute given.
I understand that we're waiting for the IRP2, from energy. But I'm just a little bit concerned. I'm very interested in your talking about developing an industry to clean coal. But it raises a question for me. Whilst we are hoping that we're going to maybe be going more nuclear, is Eskom of the view, and that's what I'm picking up, and I don't know whether I'm correct now in developing this industry for cleaner coal, intending to opt for keeping a big coal option in the energy mix? And I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but just with you saying that, will you be continuing to keep the biggest component? And I understand that there's a cost involved in this. Is that what you are going to be plugging for?
Unfortunately, I have to answer that question as a company, Eskom. And as a company, Eskom, we have a funding commitment that we need to deliver Kusile into the power grid of South Africa. The technology choices thereafter need to be directed through this government debate with all stakeholders. How Eskom fits into that future is still to be determined. But certainly as a country, we're making commitments internationally that we have to start moving away from coal. But as Mr. Macron says, coal will be with us for a very long time. It's our natural resource. It's our natural resource.
Yeah.
Let's be clear, it's not for Eskom alone to choose. That's the point. It's not for Eskom alone to say, go nuclear, go this way, go the other way. 3.5 years ago, the then Minister of Public Enterprise came into an ESCOM board meeting and said, we're going coal. We're going nuclear. We started preparing a whole host of plans in that direction. But it became very clear, when it comes to the good old rand, cents and dollars, you've got to make the choice that you can afford the most, and we're now where we are, building Medupi, Kusile, as coal-fired power station. It's a monetary consideration issue, it's an affordability issue in a country that has other objectives to deal with poverty and so forth. From where we sit, since 1982 up to now, we've been in nuclear, where we've got no doubt that it's safe, we've got no doubt that we know how to do it. That is not the issue. The issue is someone from a policy and regulatory perspective must say, this is what must be done, and then we'll align and do what we have to comply with. That is really the issue. We have more than enough reserves to take our current power stations down to the end of their life.
You know what? Mr. Makwana proposed, and I hope you are making this thing to sound, that we must have a conversation on coal science, and I think we must call it coal, and subdivide it into various things. Coal science and whatever, coal. So I propose that we put that aside as one conversation we will have very soon. Because I think I like the question, because in one meeting when we were sitting with ESCOM, and I know it was in April, and I had a South African flag in front of me, we were told that our coal reserves are depreciating, and they are very deep under the belly of the earth, and they, when they come that deep, they are of lesser and lesser quality. So we keep on getting mixed and different signals in terms of our coal supply. You have just assured that, us that the coal supply is there, it's enough, and we had another report from ESCOM. So I think we must have an engagement on coal, coal contract, coal science, anything coal related as an item of discussion.
We should, in that meeting, and just so.
It was not just ESCOM in that meeting that day.
You were in the UK with the person.
Yes,
yeah.
No, before, we were in Davos.
Yeah, Davos.
Yeah, you had coal mines there as well.
So, when you have other people, you're in the person?
No, I have an official document that corroborates what I'm saying, Chairperson. Again,
I hear from the mouth of Brian.
We'll ask him to come and say that again. But coal in maybe the Department of Mines and Minerals can tell us this as well. Mm-hmm. Coal in South Africa can be mined for many, many years. In the Palale, we've got up to 100 years worth of unmined coal as a country.
And there are new coal deposits. That's why we want to.
And other parts of the country where you also have another 100 years worth of unmined coal.
Let's stop right here and have a dedicated coal discussion in one meeting. Thanks.
If we only became a generator, what would that be to our cash flows? It would obviously improve them, because if we sold off transmission and distribution as Eskom, we would sell them at fair value. And so somebody would have to pay us fair value, and therefore the problem would just go to somebody else, because they'd have to work out how they're going to find the money to pay us. So yes, it would improve Eskom's position. It's unlikely to improve the South African position. On the second issue of how confident are we later on in our presentation, we talk about one of the specific options we are using to try and close the 190 billion gap is to introduce equity into Kusile. We appointed Credit Suisse to look at that. We are far down the track in that, but we have no feedback yet to give, and we will know by the end of May whether it is doable, because what the challenge is if you take a traditional independent power producer, the way you would normally do that is prior to even beginning the construction, you would have identified your equity partners, your debt partners, and you would wrap up your construction risk all at one, all in the beginning. The way we're trying to do it is we've already committed ourselves to this construction project, and now we're trying to bring in equity holders. That makes it more difficult to do. So I don't think we're sitting here highly confident it can be done. But just to reemphasize, we have around 50 potential options to close this funding gap that we're currently looking at. We're not just sitting here, and that's just one of them.
I want us to jump to Kusile because our concern of certainty of supply last year and a few months ago was completion of Midubi and Kusile. And so because the World Bank kind of allays solves our problems to a certain extent, and Mr. Makwana wants to take his head around Midupi, I want us to talk about Kusile and the next 7 years. The prospects, the issues of finding equity partnerships, the interpretations of the stakeholders in this country, the issues of privatization, etc., etc. And then also the issue of your credit rating.
Okay.
I'm looking at time, so for me those are the two critical issues I want us at least to speak to before we end this conversation today, and then map the way forward thereafter.
Is the committee agrees with you?
Mr. Van Dijk?
Chairperson, no, I understand. I just
have I
not at all. I'm just swapped to the last slide on the presentation because I've put up a very overall slide called potential solutions. So this is hardly cast in stone, but it's right at the end, last slide, and it's trying to highlight what we have in mind to close this gap. But it's not a conclusive piece of work because we don't have board approval, I don't have stakeholder approval. But what it says is if you start right at the top, in the 3-year cumulative and the 109 and the 7-year cumulative, what you can see up there, right at the back, right back. Okay, so right at the back, in the 3 years, at the top number, it says I have a 3-year 111 billion gap that we spoke about, and I have a 7-year 190 billion. What are the opportunities and the probabilities of closing that? That's really the question. Whether it relates to Casilo or not is not really the answer. The one thing I did allude to, we do have an opening cash position at 1 April of 15 billion rand, which was not put into the funding plan, okay, because it was a cash reserve that Eskom had. So that's a definite. So we've already closed it by 15 billion rand. The second portion is, when we spoke about the 93 billion, I've taken it out of my 7-year cash flows as a potential solution to say that we need to find another funding mechanism for this. So if you take it out for 7 years, because there's nothing in the 3 years. Efficiencies, savings through efficiencies we spoke about. So we believe we're targeting over the 3 years, potentially 10 billion, could be more, but that's the target. And over the 7 years, 20 billion cumulative. So that brings your funding gap in the 3 years down to 86 billion, and the 7 years down to 62 billion. Okay, so it brings your gap down cumulatively. How do we potentially fund it? There's potentials of equity in power stations. There's potentials of equity in Eskom. There's potentials of international bonds. There's potentials of export credit agencies. We still have 60 billion rand of a government guarantee that we can use to raise debt. So as you start breaking the elephant down, you can start figuring out where is it that you're going to find the solutions. So we do, to find that bottom half, that 85 billion gap in the short term, or 86 billion gap, we do have 50 odd options that we're looking at. And those are the ones that we need to take through the approval process and obviously come back to this committee to say, this is the track on which we're going. But what is really outstanding in here, or uncertain, is the 93 billion. Because that definitely requires some different form of funding. So whatever that 93, which is there beyond Kustile, that's a different debate. So as Eskom, we're focusing on the 3-year and the 7-year from a Kustile perspective. That's what we're currently focusing our minds around. And we believe that we will have options around those, doable options.
I have two responses. Are you done?
Yes.
Okay.
Just that you're still holding on to your mic, so I want you
to. I have serious qualms about your proposal about an equity in Eskom. What does that mean? Are you suggesting that you must sell a share of Eskom? That speak to ordinary language to an ordinary South African, you are implying that you are suggesting that we must sell a share of Eskom.
No, I'm not suggesting that. What I'm suggesting is that, just following on exactly what you have alluded to, is that if, in terms of the energy plan going forward, it is decided that distribution assets, for example, need to get sold, or transmission or independent operator needs to get sold out of Eskom, that would introduce equity into Eskom. It would, because somebody would have to pay for it. We could also look at a number of power stations to introduce equity. We don't have to look at Kusile specifically. So you could have two or three where you've got a minority interest from equity. It's just one of the options that is potentially there. And all I'm saying to you is now that we know that we can bring this gap down, we now have very firm game plans of how we intend to do it, these 50 options that we're looking at. So it's really just to give you a feel for the overall option.
I want to ring fence that.
I just want to add, Chairperson, if I may. This matter of Kusile, I hear your concerns and your reservations. As I said at the outset, that one of the risks we took coming into this conversation.
Hold on, I'll manage it. Yeah, I'll manage it. Okay, all right,
bye. You are not my friend.
I'm so sorry.
For many years, you've never done that in our meeting.
You would recall Chairperson at the outset indicated that there's a process in place which includes a cabinet process and so forth. This particular method, Kusile, ESCOM was tasked by a decision of cabinet and then a decision of the board of ESCOM to look for partners in Kusile at project finance level. Not in terms of ESCOM holding, not in terms of anything, but in terms of Kusile. Now, let me finish the point that Mr. Oflati made. We have not yet arrived at what the right combination of solutions is. It's part of this process indicated that we've appointed Credit Suisse to investigate and research a package for us within 2 months, so that by June we then have a model on the table on how best to move forward with Kusile. But
Mr. Mokana, you answered the wrong question. My concern is not about
You asked the question, Madam Chair, about equity in ESCOM. I'm clarifying that question.
You see, Mr. Mokana, you wrote equity in power station soap or slash equity in ESCOM. I sent you out the last one after the slash. So that's my concern. My concern is not with putting there or a power station or it's about ESCOM holding.
Kusile is a power station, Chairperson.
ESCOM Holdings as a company.
ESCOM Holdings has at no point had a conversation with anybody around equity in itself.
That's what I want to hear.
And that's exactly what I was responding to, Madam Chair. That the only matter we're concerning ourselves with is a decision by Cabinet and by the Board to look at equity in Kusile.
Thank you. Because when you put this equity in ESCOM, it could be confusing.
We understand that, but it's Kusile we're talking about.
Thanks. So, Chairperson,
you wanted to then talk about the credit rating?
Yes. I'm very happy to hear that equity in ESCOM does not mean equity in ESCOM only.
No. It's profit. Equity is profit. So
okay.
you know, profit. You could sell things and get profit. Equity is the same.
Yeah,
as
well. Not as
Sorry, I apologize for the confusion on that.
Okay.
The important thing about the credit rating is in order for us, there's no doubt that the solution going forward is that a combination, because of the size of this that Mr. McConnell spoke about, the combination of this is quite important. And in order for ESCOM to continue to be able to raise money, it needs to have a strong credit rating. And that will be very important going forward. So if you can get more equity-type funding in a power station, then it entails you to try and find more of the debt, you know, because there's less risk for the debt holder. So it's very, very important for us. And one of the options we're considering is what is our best ratio, I'll just go to that slide, our best ratio to have. In terms of our credit rating. So currently these are the ESCOM credit ratings, BBB plus, you know, anything, and it's a negative outlook, anything down from that just keeps costing you more and more money, as you would have worked out with the Greek situation, and if you get turned to junk bond status, then you're in real trouble, and it's not only a problem of raising the funds, it's also the price you pay, then you're really talking serious interest rates. So this is absolutely critical for us, and whatever solutions we have must strengthen this and improve this. I think that was the point of this. Yeah.
Any comments from you?
That's correct.
The truth of
price. Yes.
How does the triple B plus of ESCOM compare with the rating of the
country? We are lower than the country, and in fact, we are lower than the current country rating. And in fact, in order to preserve that rating we have, the credit agencies are relying on the government guarantee that has been given to us to support our debt. So on a standalone basis, we're quite weak right now. We need to get back to a position of strength.
I want to raise two things that no one wants to say. Mr. Makwana, you see why I was particularly insistent on that what between Eskom is, our role there, like Labour, have a suspicion which we have to allay that government is having an intention to privatize a portion of Eskom, etc. So as intermediaries between yourself and government, etc., we need to get accurate information from you so that we can engage with okay, you know exactly what we are talking about. So I'm very grateful that you've clarified that. But also, when you put that credit rating to us, you need also to help us, tell us what is it that we can do to assist to improve your credit rating in relation, as we relate to the shareholder, as we relate to whoever. We don't just put problem there,
did I miss anything else? Thanks, Chair. In the old dispensation, a member of parliament once was asked to respond to an appellation in parliament about the old South African leftings. There was an appellation that the quality of food there wasn't so good. And he stood up in parliament and said, "Dimensa would be slate of a level 3 of a level 3." So back to your question about how you can help us. Is really Dimensa would be slate of a level de donkere of a level lechte. So our situation is it's a tough one, but a very simple one, Madam Chair. Tough in that, as Mr. Flatt indicated so many times in his presentation, if Eskom management and its directors behaved strictly according to the code of PFMA, code of good practice in terms of King 3 and the Companies Act, in that spirit of ons moet besluit of ons wil vlieg of vreet, the choice would be very clear to Eskom. You'd simply say, "I can't afford this, no more build." But because we appreciate that we are there for the country, we're owned by the country, we are constantly looking at opportunities to balance delivering the security of supply and at the same time walking the tightrope of securing the funding. So in that context, that's why, even though we know that Priscilla is going to be difficult, we factored it into our plans, because if we don't deliver it, Eskom is all that South Africa, Eskom is all that South Africa has. There's nobody who's going to emerge tomorrow and have the capability to build a coal-powered power station in 3 years, except Eskom. Similarly, nuclear and so forth. So that's what is guiding us. What can we do as Eskom in this decade, up to 2017. That's why we appear short-term in the eyes of honorable members. But it's really to say, how do we, in this decade, balance the two? While South Africa reconfigures its integrated resources plan in terms of energy, while the policy gets clearer, while NERSA also gets to come closer to the reality in terms of the tariff, while the economy turns around from recession to a point where the public can afford cost-reflective electricity tariffs. So there's a whole host of complex that are compounding this balance between continuity of supply and proper funding. So whatever we come to this house with on this subject, it will constantly be how are we walking that tightrope. And we hope, Chairperson, that in 2 months we'll have clearer, better answers. Hopefully, we shall also have had full alignment with the shareholder in terms of reporting to them and indicating what the choices are. And in that, then hopefully we'll have better alignment. We hear your point, Chairperson, that we need to engage the public, involve the public as well. But perhaps again, as you've seen how technical these conversations are, we need to do so bearing in mind that in the end, we still have to walk that tightrope of finding the solutions ourselves. And hopefully we've given you enough food for thought today to reflect with us on this. Thousands, Chair, again, so that next time when you quote that we were in this room in this hotel, the question of ESCOM doesn't say we don't know where things are heading, because we are participants in the shaping of the IRP. We are participants in the Interministerial Committee on Energy. What ESCOM is saying is we don't have authority to say where to go. I just wanted to clarify.
That's why we want those who have authority to say if you ask in your question. That's why I think we would like to invite you when you are able to attend, because we will see them out on where we stand in terms of policy in your question, so that we very officially from the about whatever they have. And then we will have the conversation on coal, as we said. We will also have the conversation on power station, the 27 of them. But I think ahead of that conversation, the committee agrees, we need a conversation of today, which I think we did not do that today. It never does. So I just wanted to single out those three things going forward, that they are, and then the other thing is that our own shareholder representative, we said that we know that she is also participating in the IMC and RIT process, so we'll be engaging her efforts in terms of finality.
Yeah.
Website. I believe you have Mr. Jacob Medici on your board, is that right?
Yes,
on the road accident path, isn't he?
Yeah,
I met him with a meeting of the transport committee.
Yeah.
These are my best wishes.
Thank you.
I have only the generic business card. I've run out of. I will send you an email, actually. Thank you, sir. I wonder if I should be able to send a copy of your presentation to the PMG.
We will send a couple of
Okay. You've got documents.
Thank you so much.